I'm Gab, he's Jules. Kind of stormy over West London, but no near stormy this evening when Chelsea take on Spurs. But Jules, forget all that because we got to talk Champions League.
Oh, semi-final.
It's Bayern Munich. It's Real Madrid. We're going to focus on that one. We'll get to Paris Saint-Germain later. We will. We have to. Kind of say, like, in terms of excitement, in terms of twists and turns, this game, I thought, absolutely delivered. And I think, for me, we're reminded of one thing. And you could have a really exciting game between teams near the bottom of the table, teams from the third division, teams from non-league, whatever. The difference is that, well, you've got teams at the highest level, you have individuals who can do outrageous stuff.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, I'll just pick two moments out. I know there's more. Toni Kroos's pass. And also Leroy Sané cutting inside and just finishing the way he did.
Yeah, I mean, the quality of the game was incredible, really. I know Kim makes a mistake on the penalty and on the Vinicius goal. There's a foul on Musiala for the penalty for Bayern too. So there are mistakes being made, but also you make mistakes when the opposition is that good. But overall, when you even look at Bayern made 522 passes, I think, with a ratio of 91% passing successful, and Real Madrid was 94% with 480 or something like that. So there was just not a bad pass, not a missed pass, not a bad touch. There was just everything tactically. Tuchel especially, I thought, had clearly a plan A and then a plan B at halftime when they went behind. Carlo was Carlo, and this Real Madrid side has this aura around it that even when they 2-1 down, they're just always somehow in the game. And Vinny was very special, the way he scored and the way he kind of baited Kim and for Kroos then to find that incredible pass, but also his ball for Rodrigo that got the penalty and then scoring the penalty. It was just amazing. The atmosphere was amazing. It felt really like this kind of European heritage, European classico, because they are obviously meeting a lot in the semi-finals of the Champions League.
One thing that struck me, and it's nothing new, but the decision to play Mazraoui again at left back.
Yeah.
Mazraoui, who, when he's played full back, has generally played on the right, in place of Alphonso Davies. Davies hasn't had the best of seasons. He hasn't had the best of performances when he has played. Was there an element about people like you linking him to Real Madrid?
I don't know. There's clearly something, otherwise he would play more. Did you see when he came on, Alphonso Davies, wearing the Pavlovich shirt?
No.
So he was on the bench. He's about to come on. So he must have taken maybe his warm-up top off and grabbed a shirt on the bench, thinking it's his, puts it on, runs towards the fourth referee. He's about to go on. And the kit man from Bayern runs towards him and says, it's the wrong shirt. And it was Pavlovich. I mean,
how cool would that have been? He could have tricked him into thinking he was Pavlovich, and therefore it's a lot less quick than...
Yeah, no. Maybe not.
Because, of course, there's...
But yeah, maybe there's clearly something. Otherwise, he would play more.
On the Real Madrid end, we saw this again. You know, I always have to laugh when we overemphasize sort of tactical systems and so on. We talk about tactics a lot here, but I was struck by the way Rodrigo and Vinicius were used, where Rodrigo most of the time was wider left than Vinicius. And Rodrigo spoke after the game on Italian Sky Italia, and he said, look, you know, sometimes we don't even know a few minutes before the start of the game how he wants us to line up. But he's constantly, or the bench is constantly giving us information when we need to make adjustments. So you're there in person, and you have essentially a really, really asymmetrical team, right? Because
it was a clear 4-4-2. It was an absolute 4-4-2. Very, very just normal. Bellingham very close and very high next to Vinny. Rodrigo left, Valverde right. And clearly, I think...
But we're not talking, you just said 4-4-2, but we're not talking 4-4-2 in the sense that Rodrigo's playing in front of the fullback in a line of four, or Valverde the other side.
Well, we're our talking, position they were.
It looked a lot more fluid than that.
When they had the ball, I think there was probably a lot more movement. And you see on the goal, on the penalty, for example, that Rodrigo finds himself as a nine on Kim, and Vini had dropped deeper to play him that ball in the box. And at that time, there had been a few changes made. Brahim had come on, Bellingham had come off as well, which I was a bit surprised. Valverde had come off. So Carlo changed it, evolved it. I just like that Tuchel had clearly a plan A with Goretzka, a plan B with Guerrero, who obviously makes more run forwards. And that made a big difference in the second half. And then Carlo also had some tools with Brahim, with Modric, with moving Rodrigo, that fluidity that you mentioned, to counter what Tuchel did in that second half.
It's a cliche, but it's true. It's halftime.
Yeah.
It's 2-2. Real Madrid obviously will be at home at the Bernabeu, and they'll be at home for 30 minutes of injury time and penalties if required. Maybe they shade it. They were my favorites.
Yeah,
because they're a better team.
Like a 51-49 if you want, 55-45.
I mean, if I was to ask you, who's a better team, Real Madrid or Bayern? Would you say?
Real Madrid.
Okay.
But then I didn't think they would be 2-1 down after the first half that they had in that game either on Tuesday. I was very surprised how Bayern turned that game around, thanks to Tuchel's changes at halftime and things like that. But I was still surprised to see Real Madrid under pressure. And by the way, at 2-1 up, Dier has two headers on the corners that could go 3-1. There's one ball for Kane. So there's more chances for Bayern to go 3-1 up before Real Madrid can even think about going back to 2-2.
But I guess my question would be, does it mean that maybe Real Madrid aren't as better than Bayern as we thought before this? Are we remodulating that? Because for me, I'm not going to play the percentage game here, but it's definitely more than 51%. For Real Madrid, as I see it right now, against Bayern. Because I would also throw in the fact that from Bayern perspective, obviously De Ligt, hopefully he'll be available for the return which I don't, again, it's not just about throwing Kim under the bus, and we'll get to that, but I think De Ligt is Bayern's best defender, just with all his foibles and whatever.
Yeah, I agree.
But then equally, I thought Laimer had a, at least on my television, Laimer had an absolute monster game.
Amazing.
He looked like the Laimer of 4 years ago before he decided to go to Bayern. I have no reason to believe he's going to do that again at the Bernabeu, right?
That kind of performance.
Yeah. So
yeah, but on the other hand, if clearly Real Madrid decided to play a bit deeper and a medium block and wait to see what could happen when they had the ball, and they had some good moments, like on the goal, and the goal comes up. Tuchel said something on Tuesday on Monday in his press conference before the game. He said the thing with Real Madrid is they will have the ball and 10 seconds later they will score, but you would not have seen that goal coming. And it's exactly what happened, because if you go back 10 seconds before the goal of Vinicius, the first one, the way the two teams are set, where Kroos has the ball, where Vinicius is, where Kim and Dier, okay, you can see that maybe Kim and Dier are a little bit too far apart for two centre-backs, but nothing can tell you they're going to score from this now.
No, there's no danger. There's no danger.
But then,
the fact that it's Toni Kroos.
Yeah, exactly, and Vinny. But on Wednesday, next week, in the second leg, Bayern can say, we take the nil-nil, we go to extra time, we go to penalties. So you can have the ball this time, we wait for you. And then Gnabry, who came on, I think would start ahead of Müller. So you will have Musiala, Gnabry, Sané, Kane to hit you on the counter, which is going to be the game plan for Bayern. It's very easy. And that's where I think they're going to try to counter.
This would make for a very dull game, I think, unless Real Madrid score first or score early, if this is going to be the... I'll tell you right now, I think if Tuchel approaches it that way, like he may go through, and obviously we've seen him do this in the past when necessary. Bayern simply playing on the counter against Real Madrid at the Bernabeu is a really, really bad idea. In fact, I will go further.
Is it?
I would challenge
they beat
you.
Arsenal.
I would, sorry?
That's how they beat Arsenal, and that was at home. That's what they did.
I would, but Arsenal aren't.
No, I know, but I think they have everything to be really good in transitions.
Okay. So, first of all, Arsenal aren't Real Madrid.
You know, I know. But I think Bayern Munich have everything
to
be really good.
That wasn't at the Bernabeu. That was at home, right?
Yeah.
So, what I would add is that this is the Bernabeu we're talking about. This is the Miedo Scenico. This is the myth which Tuchel referenced, which our colleague Rob Dawson talked about as well. I think, and this is why I'm generally against playing that way, is that at the Bernabeu with 90,000, with that crowd, with everything that can happen, with the notion of Vinicius running at you or Rodrigo or whoever you want, call, it's very likely or possible that a call isn't going to go your way. And then you give something up. And then you have to adjust. And you're saying, we've set up to play on the counter. Now we need to go and build play. Okay, here's Kier. All right, Kimi, Kier, you go build it from your right back position, which is where he's going to play him, right? It's very difficult. I personally think you're better off doing your patterns of play like you did in that spell at home after the sort of first 10, 15 minutes and impose yourself on Bayern, on Real Madrid. To me, this is a much more rational
game plan. It's hard to do, though, at the Bernabeu for all the reasons that you mentioned. And I don't even think that this is what they want. You do that and you expose yourself to all the counter-attacking that Real Madrid is so good at. And you saw even on Tuesday.
No, but I mean, Jules, I'm not saying that you go out and you...
No, but you're saying that they should play the same way that they play at home.
They should certainly do much more effort to get the ball, create patterns of play. You can do it without exposing yourself. You don't have to go and commit a million men forward. But you cannot, I think, invite Real Madrid's pressure because there's so many things beyond your control and you're not a team that's built for that. I don't want to see Dyer back. This isn't Bonucci, Chiellini, and Barzagli from like 10 years ago. This is Eric Dyer and De Ligt. De Ligt said it so himself. He's not comfortable sitting in the 6-yard box and just soaking up pressure.
No,
Came even less so.
No, you can play in transition without waiting in your 6-yard box as well. I don't think they're going to park the bus and have 11 men in their own box. I just think that it would be very wise from them to let Real Madrid have the ball. And especially Vini is not going to play on the left-hand side. He's going to play central again with Bellingham, which, again, is, I know he's scoring a great goal, but it's harder for him to get the ball and face his defender and go at him when he plays centrally compared to wide, where you naturally have more space. And I think if you're from a Bayern point of view, I think Goretzka will start. As good as Guerrero was when he came on and his partnership with Laimer, I think Goretzka will start for him and Laimer to be that solid in midfield, especially against Kroos, and then you can manage that. If they manage well the first 20 minutes, I think they will have a chance on transition to really hit them, and it would be better for Kane as well, because Kane really on Tuesday, I don't know, he scored his pen, which was great. Bellingham tried to trash talk him, which was funny. Kane didn't even hear because the atmosphere was so amazing, didn't even hear what Bellingham said. But I like the fact that Bellingham tried it. I like that kind of personality. It's good. Then Dyer tried to do it with Vinicius later. That's fine. But really, Kane was not that much in the game in the first leg. And I think by playing a bit more in transition, you will also get Kane a bit more. That will force Nacho, Rudiger to follow him to drop when he drops. I think there's something good there for Tuchel.
I don't know. I would caution against that. We'll see what Tuchel does. We'll see what works out.
Quite fascinating.
One of the subplots here was sort of Bellingham against Musiala, like the two wonder kids who left England and the riches of the Premier League, which is, you know, obviously Musiala is a much more complicated story. But I didn't think either one dominated. I thought Musiala probably came out ahead.
Yeah.
Bellingham's biggest contribution, other than Kane trash talking, was a lot of the work he did off the ball. I thought on the ball there wasn't much there.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to this, though, in the return leg, because Bellingham v. Musiala is the kind of clash that we're going to get to see for the next 10 years.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, remember when they were England youth team teammates? Because Musiala obviously played for England before choosing Germany. And they were both great. And now they face each other in a game like this. Musiala much better when he swapped from the right onto the left. That's when he got the penalty. It makes sense for him to come inside his right foot too. And for Jude...
Why was he on the right in the first place?
But no, I don't know. I didn't really understand why Sané was on the left and Musiala on the right, unless... I'm not really sure.
What, if you get crosses for Kane? I mean, if anything, Rudiger and Nacho are going to be comfortable with that.
They actually came more inside, both of them, in that first half, which, I don't know, maybe it was to control a bit more Lucas Vazquez and Mendy. I'm not even sure really why. But
you have to control Mendy for you.
Yeah,
winning.
I know, man.
Sorry, for a long.
No, but I don't know. But it worked much better in the second half when they swapped over. And for Bellingham, you're right. Off the ball, it's all great. And, you know, he's clearly a machine physically. But with the ball, I was a bit disappointed. I think the higher you play him, you lose a lot of the great things he could do on the ball.
We had this conversation before we were casting the Real Madrid of the future. And I said, he may not end up playing there. Maybe he shouldn't. With the guys who were coming in, like Endrick, and there might be somebody else coming possibly. Yeah. Rather than trying to shoehorn Bellingham into the position he played this year, just let him play in midfield. Let him be the next Toni Kroos.
He felt on Tuesday he didn't maybe have the freedom that he usually has when Rodrigo and Vini played at the front two and he plays as a 10 behind in a proper diamond midfield. Well, Tuesday was very much a flat 4-4-2 and he was almost up front with Vinicius in that front two, which I don't really think works for him. And yeah, he still has a bit of freedom, but not as much as when he's attending a diamond, and I don't think that really suited him on Tuesday.
You know me, I'm always team Brian Diaz.
Yes. But were you surprised to see Jude coming off?
No. Not.
For the amount of goals he scored late this season, I thought he might stay.
You figure a set piece or whatever, exactly. He can give you something. But I genuinely thought this is when, despite what some people say, Carlo doesn't do anything during games, I actually thought, although I'm going to substantially change this around with this move. And, somebody's got to come off and give him what was happening on the right-hand side of the field. It really had to be Bellingham.
Mm.
That was the guy you could sacrifice in that context.
Yeah. Same with Kroos. I mean, when Kroos came off and Modric came on, I was like, okay, but you take away Kroos' quality of passing. Not that I didn't think Modric
is bad. You have the guy who's bad at passing coming
off. Yeah, no, but I just thought, okay, Kroos after the assist on the first goal in the first half. And then, if you remember, in that second half, Modric is on the ball and is the chance that Vinicius has one-on-one with Neuer, that maybe Vini should cross for Brahim, actually, right, and Neuer makes a good save. But that ball over the top from Modric is just perfect. And I was like, okay, yeah, it's fine. Modric can come on and do another genius pass.
But we saw this in the Clásico as well. I thought when Modric came on, he played really, really well. Mm. Listen, if you can give me 20 minutes or 30 minutes as the old Modric, meaning like the Modric you had before, I don't need you out there for 90 minutes around chasing people down, because he did a lot of off-the-work work. He was really busy off the ball defensively as well. Final point on Eder Militao, because we had this thing where it's been, 3 weeks now that he's come back into training, and people were even talking, could he play against Arsenal, blah, blah, blah. And, we had to see him. He plays he came on for a minute, he came on for another minute. Simple question, would you break up the Nacho-Rudiger partnership for the return leg if, let's say, Militao starts at the weekend, plays 90 minutes and shows you that he's fit?
So we disagree on this. I'm not sure I would. I saw after the game, I was pitch side, and Militao was doing, a lot when the players don't play. They do a lot. They run and they sprint for the whole length of the pitch with the fitness coach and everything. So he looked great. He looked fit. He was running and running up and down for 10 or 15 minutes. And I think he will play this weekend in the league. I just thought Nacho and Rudiger played great against City together in the second leg. They played well together. As in, if you just think about them together against Kane on Tuesday night in the first leg, I would, at the Bernabeu, like you said, with everything that he means, with the way the game should go, I would probably keep them.
All right.
I know you would play Eder Militao, but I would keep them.
Again, if he's fit, ring rust, whatever, he's been training, he's been coming on in games, it's not like...
No, you're right.
Walking out of the physio
room. No, I hear you.
I hear you. He is a better player. He gives you more. I also, it's not like Nacho's getting any younger either. And by the way, in terms of breaking up the partnership, the Nacho-Rudiger partnership has been broken up tons, even in the spell when he was out, because we've seen Tchouaméni, of course, fill in.
Yeah. More like if you look at the last two Champions League games where they played with each other against Haaland and Kane and City and Bayern, they did really well.
Right. That would be, okay, but
yeah, that's all.
We'll see what Carlo makes of that one. But for me, I think there's a risk in sticking to something just because it's worked before and falling into that kind of little
gap. That is true.
It's only a kick, a jump, a block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this.
Adidas.
All right, enough Bayern. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's go, Gab.
Jules, I hate to go there, but I have no choice. Paris Saint-Germain were heavy favorites over Borussia Dortmund to advance to the Champions League final after losing 1-0. They're still my favorites, but less than before.
Yeah, I'm with you, I think. It was my first time, by the way, in Dortmund. And, you know,
the yellow wall, the wet vest.
You know, sometimes some stadium's atmosphere are a bit overhyped. You know, that people say, it's great. You go there and you're like, okay, yeah, it's good, but...
It's the loudest place in the world.
This one was just incredible. Really, I mean, and we've said it before, but it should be on every football fan's bucket list.
Yeah.
Whether you like German football or not, Dortmund or not, the yellow color or the black color, but it doesn't matter. Go once in your life. It's really worth it. It was amazing. And the 4,000 PSG fans, by the way, love to you and credit to you because you were still amazing too against 76,000 Dortmund fans. I love the heart that this Dortmund team plays with. I really do. They play with so much heart, so much solidarity. They fight for each other. It's great. They're not as good as PSG. They're not as talented, clearly. Yeah, they've got Sancho, a bit of Brand, a bit of Sabitzer sometimes. Hummels, in terms of passing, outstanding. No problem. But PSG are a better team, and PSG created enough chances at least to get a draw on Wednesday night.
The worst.
Dortmund could have scored more. It could have finished 2-2 without... any discussion, any debate?
The Hakimi chance and the Fabian Ruiz header are the ones that stand out for me.
Well, Dembele as well. Gab, Dembele is on the penalty spot. He can't blast it over the bar. So he's on his own.
Kylian Mbappe missing in action?
Yeah, again. You know what? I'm more worried. Sometimes you don't get the service, but he never attacked the box or the six-yard box. He never made that run into the six-yard box. All he wanted was the ball on the edge of the box. Almost if he wanted to get... away from Hummels and Schlotterbeck. And
those are Hummels and Schlotterbeck. We've made so much fun of the way Dortmund...
They can't defend in the league, yeah.
Yeah.
And I don't know. And that's, I think that was an issue. PSG's first legs, or especially first half of first legs in the Champions League, knockout stages against Real Sociedad at the Parc des Princes, not good against Barcelona at the Parc des Princes, not good either. And usually at halftime, they kind of correct things. This time it wasn't to be. Sancho was outstanding, really. And when I see him, a bit like when I see Tuchel and I think Chelsea really sacked Tuchel to get those managers after. When I see Sancho and I think really Ten Hag put him in the...
Stop it.
I mean, I don't know. But
can we show some love for Niklas Füllkrug too? Everybody makes fun of him.
Oh, well, great story.
How does he accelerate away from the defenders like that?
Because the line is terrible from PSG.
And it's good timing and it's brilliant. Yeah. And he has a little gap in his teeth as well.
Great first touch, great finish. The second leg is going to be amazing. And Gab, that result plus the Bayern 1 confirms that the Bundesliga with Serie A will have 5 teams. They're top 5 in the league in the Champions League next season. So no 5th place for England. Are you happy with that?
Yeah, I'm very happy with it. You have rules. You have a system in place. It's based on performances in Europe. United and Newcastle screwed the pooch this year. You pay Braceway. Next year, it's going to be somebody else. Paris Saint-Germain spent a whopping 60 million euros for Manuel Ugarte from Sporting last season. It is not exactly a fixture in that midfield, and there are suggestions he could move on. Jules, what would you do? Would you move him on? Would you say, Virginia, Zaire Emery, my boy Fabian?
Yeah, and to be fair, he had his chance. He started at the start of the season. Then Luis Enrique moved Vitinha in this number 6.
Because little Vitinha, good Vitinha. Not big Vitinha, who's bad Vitinha. Little Vitinha, good Vitinha.
Because little Vitinha is good when you play out from the back. You know, it gives you that kind of almost Verratti vibe, which Ugarte is great at hustling and recovering the ball, but he's not as good with the ball.
Luis Campos, the genius of football, presumably he knows Portuguese football relatively well.
Yeah.
Given that...
And Ugarte was great at Sporting.
What?
Ugarte was great at Sporting.
Where they played a different system, different...
Yeah, true.
And they have Luis Enrique there, and what makes you
think... So Ugarte was signed before Luis Enrique, though.
Sorry?
Ugarte was signed before Luis Enrique arrived.
Right, but they knew he was going to get there. They were going to get a Luis Enrique type manager, presumably.
You think so?
Doesn't feel like a fit.
Yeah, no. So it might go, it might stay. Gab, we mentioned it on Monday, but we need your take on this. How significant is it that André Villas-Boas was elected president of Porto?
I think it's hugely significant. I love the way people in the game can reinvent themselves. And if I have to put my money on, it's him, because he's educated, because he chose football, because of his life experience. Is he going to be perfect? No. He wasn't perfect as a coach. He's not perfect as a person. But after 42 years, 42 years of Nuno Pinto da Costa, the same guy being in charge, you have to make a change. This was way, way back on Monday by Robert Lewandowski's hat-trick. Help Barcelona come from behind to beat Valencia, who played the second half with 10 men for two. Jules, I go back and forth on this. So 23 goals in all competitions this year. It's his lowest seasonal total since 2011, although he does have three games to go. And he turns 36 in August. And he makes an enormous amount of money.
Yeah.
Is it time for Barcelona to move him on?
I mean, when you think that he's got a contract until 2026 still, that's a long time. How did you give him that long of a contract? It's always the same. It depends who you replace him with. Because, what, you play Ferran Torres, you play...
Vitor Roque.
Vitor Roque. Is Vitor Roque ready to help you? That's the thing with Lewandowski, though. Okay, he's not as good as he used to be. Sometimes we see that talent coming back. We said it a few times this season. Some goals he scored. It was, the movement was perfect. The finishing was perfect. The touch was perfect. He still has it, of course. He still looks fit. He's not overweight. He's not super slow. He's not, you know, the first leg against PSG in the Champions League, for example, he was outstanding, holding up the ball. The game plan worked perfectly. So there's still a value in him, for sure. Is he worth what you're paying him for?
Two things to that. One is there's reports in Spain that say that if he doesn't play in at least 55%, they can of Barcelona games, they can cancel the final year of his contract, and so they wouldn't be on the hook for his salary. So I think next season will help decide that. I wonder if Lewandowski needs to adjust the way he plays, and he has the technical ability to do it, right? I mean, he's a phenomenal athlete, but he's also, I think in terms of technical gifts, maybe one of the top five forwards, just in terms of technical ability. I mean, I put him ahead of Haaland. Put him pretty close. Put him ahead of Kane, actually, as well. Oh, you may debate that. Put him ahead of Lukaku. Whatever you want, right?
Yeah.
Your pal Dovbik. But, so maybe you could adjust and play the position a little bit differently and still find a way to contribute on this team. As a now goal scorer, that is a lot of money to spend, though, for not very many goals.
Bye to Bayern, Gab. Ralf Rangnick was the hot favorite to take over, and the club were reportedly willing to pay compensation up to €5 million to the Austrian FA because he was the Austrian national team head coach. But now he's staying with Austria. What happened? What changed?
Well, it depends. If you want to be a mug and you believe everything he writes in his statement, you could say, my heart is with Austria. This is not a rejection of Bayern in case... Maybe after the Euro, some point in the future, I can go back to Bayern. I don't want to shut any doors there. But my heart belongs to Austria.
But where was his heart on Tuesday when he was heavily negotiating with him?
Look, obviously, I think he owes people an explanation. And if he doesn't want to come out and say it personally, that's fine. Get your PR folk to come out. And Bayern will no doubt give their version of events because it's not possible that, you know, on Tuesday, you said, like your heart says, your heart says, negotiate with Bayern. And then it says, oh, no, don't. Like, come on, man. Like, you're not a child.
You're
65 years old, right? I think more likely what happened, everything went swimming with Bayern, and then somebody went and kind of blocked it with it. And maybe he asked for 3 years rather than 2 years, maybe with some sort of control thing. He obviously had a longstanding relationship with Max Eberl, who he worked with before. It must have been something like that. It's not Ralf waking up on Thursday morning and says, wait a minute, I'm the Austrian manager, really? Oh, yeah, this is where my heart is. Come on. Seriously. The Athletic, meanwhile, report that Jim Ratcliffe is so unimpressed with the alternatives to Erik ten Hag that he might decide just to keep him on because everybody else sucks. This is the report.
This
don't shoot the
message. Cannot be true. What? So Jim Ratcliffe is looking at Thomas Tuchel and saying, nah, Erik ten Hag is much better than this guy. He's looking at Roberto De Zerbi and he goes like, nah, Erik ten Hag is much better.
Can I come up with something? Sorry. Tuchel, mental breakdown in his last time he was in the Premier League.
But I can give and you Bayern, Thiago Motta, I can give Bayern, you managers.
And Bayern fire him early in the season. No, but these are the managers presumably Ratcliffe knows, right? De Zerbi, it feels like he's lost 15 games in a row now and being a pain in the butt with the club, right? So maybe, who knows, right?
I mean,
I'm like devil's advocate for Sir Jim. No?
If Sir Jim Ratcliffe thinks nobody's better than Erik ten Hag that I can get to my club, Manchester United. This is not Macclesfield. This is Manchester United, one of the biggest clubs in the world. If really, then I think all hope is lost, United fans.
I think this is some kind of switch mystery.
Yeah, this must be. Premier League clubs voted in principle of something called anchoring in an informal vote on Monday, Gab. This is basically a spending cap, right?
Yeah, basically. So
please explain it, but like simply for people like me who don't really understand.
All right, very simply. The league comes out and says, okay, you could only spend, and by spend we mean spending on wages, spending on transfers, but amortized, and spending on agents.
Yeah.
In the course of a season, we put all this, all your spending on players, all this in a bucket, and it can't be more than five times what the bottom club in the Premier League gets from broadcast, from central broadcast and commercial rights, or media rights, essentially, right? So that figure would be something in the region of, depending if they use a multiple of five times or four and a half times, all TBD, would be like 450, 500 million pounds, something like that. Real Madrid's budget, because they have a similar version in La Liga, although with a different criteria where it's a percentage of revenue, is something in the order of 727, which presumably is why certain clubs like Manchester City and Manchester United voted against them. They feel it would put them at a disadvantage towards Europe. Others would look at this and say, hey, look, players are our biggest expense. This is a way to keep the cost down. And this way we become profitable more quickly.
Sure.
I don't think it's going to happen in this format. I think it's going to be a ratio. I think there's too much of an onus on, if you're United, why would you ever agree to anything like this?
And if your wage bill is already 400 million or something, it doesn't leave you much.
Well, it would be tiered presumably over time and blah, blah, blah. But all right. Premier League referees boss Howard Webb has confirmed that at least one of the incidents in that Everton v Nottingham Forest game that so angered Forest, you know, the one where they said Stuart Atwell's a Luton fan, was mishandled. Does this admission make things better, Jules?
You know what I think about those Howard Webb stand-up show? I think it's great that he comes out and explains things. It's really late. Well, it's usually quite late after the incidents anyway. It doesn't change anything. We all knew that at least on those three penalty shouts, one of them was valid. We said together, at least we thought two of the three should have been pens.
And probably all of them should have been reviewed.
Yeah, you're right. I think Howard Webb is quite nice to his own referee and VAR referee by saying, yeah, they only made a mistake on one. They should have had one. Well, but the other two, they got it right. Like, come on.
So the Ashley Young on Callum Hudson-Odoi, they have something called the key match incident panel where they have like a panel of
five, is it? Yeah.
Ex-players, coaches, refereeing nerds. And they sit down and they vote, by a vote of 5-0, it was a penalty.
Yeah. And when you listen to the audio, the VAR with the referee, the VAR goes, well, I think it's like they get together. I mean, come on.
Yeah, can I make a rule? Like, honestly, just get rid of that stupid term, coming together. Honestly. I don't know.
What does that even
mean? It's coming to football parlance in this language, in this country, like 10, 15 years ago. It's one of those terms like general play, which are completely meaningless and stupid, and which I absolutely hate. Coming together, by the way, I think is worse than general play.
Milan were reportedly ready to hire Julen Lopetegui, Gab, this summer, but they've changed their mind now. Is Ralf Rangnick coming? What changed? What happened?
So, no, there was a... apparently, the way it's been reported earlier, a massive popular uprising
from
the past.
Lopetegui was on social media.
Lopetegui became Lopetegui. I don't know if it's because they don't want to bring George Mendes in-house, whatever. Now, Jerry Cardinale, who supposedly adored Lopetegui, had a three-year contract ready. Now, apparently, he's getting cold feet. Arrigo Sacchi helpfully came out and said, well, you know what? It's going to be so difficult. Why don't you just keep Stefano Pioli?
Yeah.
I'm somewhat on board with that. The alternatives right now seem to be De Zerbi, who, of course, is imploding at Brighton. Are not a bad choice.
No.
And Fonseca. But then with Fonseca, they're going to be like, oh, but he was bad when he was at Roma, supposedly. I don't know. I do think you as a club, listen to your fans, but also make your own decisions. Jules, we all saw the spat between Jurgen Klopp and Mohamed Salah this past weekend, but what do you make of Michail Antonio turning into a sideline reporter?
I don't know. I haven't seen this. What's the story?
Oh, he came out and he basically said, he appeared on some BBC podcast, and he's like, oh, well, you know, from what I hear, this is what happened between Salah, and had to do with Salah coming on, not getting dressed, not getting a hug from Klopp.
Wow. I love that.
Okay,
hey,
you're on board with
this. Come on. Brilliant. Finally, we get all the details.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help.
For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America N.A., member FDIC.
Gab, Atletico Madrid have been hit by a fine and a partial stadium closure after some of their supporters racially abused Nico Williams in the 3-1 win over Athletic Club de Bilbao on Sunday. Are you happy with the sanction?
I'd be happier if none of this ever happened. I'd be happier still if the individual supporter who's responsible was identified and prosecuted, and that may yet happen. But I think the match protocol that was applied, everything worked the way it's supposed to work. Nico Williams said, look, I heard this to, I think, the assistant referee.
Yeah.
The assistant referee wasn't patronizing, listened to him, told the referee, and they made the announcement over the loudspeaker. That's the first step. Second step, you suspend the game. Third step, you abandon the game. And people can say, oh, but, you know, you should punish the club. The club is being punished here a little bit because that.
It's true.
But you have to ask yourself, what is your ultimate goal here? And I think closing that part of the stand, next time somebody who sits in that part of the stand, and by the way, it's Atleti South stand, next time somebody starts making monkey noises, I would hope the other supporters will be the ones identifying him,
yeah,
telling him to shut up, because otherwise they won't get to go and see their team the following week, their game that they paid a ticket for, incidentally, yep, right? So it's about creating kind of that that positive peer pressure against it. And I was struck too by what Iñaki Williams said. I was just talking about this with Sid Lowe, actually. Iñaki Williams came out and said, listen, racist abuse doesn't really bother me. I've grown up with it. I can deal with it. But he's like, the issue is not about me. The issue is you're basically weaponizing, you're turning the color of somebody's skin into an insult.
Yeah.
And that affects everybody else who happens to be of that skin color. So when I get players saying like, oh, well, it's part of the game. And we can, players of color, by the way. Oh, and it doesn't bother me. Why should it bother you? Or I gain more strength for it. I don't care. I have a problem with it. It's not about you maybe able to handle it. It's everybody within earshot, you know. And so well done. Let's hope there's follow through here again. Tottenham take on Chelsea at Stamford Bridge on Thursday night. And we've had confirmation that Timo Werner and Ben Davies will be out for the rest of the season. Jules, they've got those two games in hand on Aston Villa, but they're 7 points back. What's your percentage chance that we see them in the Champions League next season?
Yeah, I mean, that defeat against Arsenal, I think, was a big blow for that. They still have to play Chelsea on Thursday night, we said, then Liverpool and City. They will have Burnley and Sheffield United as well. But the Liverpool and the City games are obviously very tough, like the Chelsea one. And for Villa, who obviously are still in Europe, they're playing Olympiacos in the Conference League semi-finals, but Brighton, Liverpool and Palace for their last three games in the Premier League seems maybe more doable. So I think Villa will finish fourth. It's a shame for Spurs that fifth place, which I think a lot of English people and even English clubs took for granted at the start of the season. They really thought that fifth place would go to England. It didn't.
And thank Ten Hag for that. Why don't we blame Ten Hag for that too?
Exactly, Ten Hag, thank you very much. So, I don't know, I'll give them a chance still because anything is possible, but I don't think Villa will collapse, and I don't even think that Spurs would win. They should win all the games to still have hope. I don't think they will, so I'll go 75-25.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Something like that, you know? And I think it's a shame because Ange, for all the good he's done, I think probably deserved. It would be great to finish with the Champions League qualification as a reward for the club, for the team, and the way they're rebuilding and the way the momentum is taking them. I think he would be only Europa League.
So it's Pierre-Emile Højbjerg's fault.
Oh, I like him.
You just like it because he's part French.
Yeah, exactly. Former Spain coach Vicente del Bosque has been put in charge of a normalization committee. That's not my term. It's the official term. While the Spanish Federation figures out how to replace the disgraced former president Luis Rubiales. But Gab, this could get them into trouble with UEFA, no?
And with FIFA.
And FIFA as well, yeah.
More likely. So basically, obviously, after the Rubiales thing, the RFEF, the Spanish FA, is being investigated. They're going to have new elections for a new leader, but the government said, okay, we're going to step in. Everybody loves Vicente del Bosque, right?
He's, of course.
You know, looks like Mr. Potato Head, but it's ultimately true. A ridiculously
very successful
manager.
Yeah.
And let's just put him in charge of this normalization committee is going to look over the processes of how we go about the next election, how we run until the next election comes, and so on. FIFA, however, have rules about this, about government interference. And they view this, the Ministry of Sport is not the FA. So whenever that happens, if people, let's say, at the Spanish FA say, wait a minute, we don't want the government getting involved in our business. We don't want, you know, we said to the Bosque, nice guy, but like we don't want his people coming and staring over us. Hey, FIFA, they're interfering. Potentially, I think potentially an extreme case, it could even lead to the Spanish FA being suspended from FIFA. I mean, it's happened before, right?
Yeah.
Now, it's not going to happen in this case. I do think it's a bit curious, so that they would go and appoint this without at least going to the FA and saying, guys, you're going to get, we sent to the boss.
Yeah.
You'll be fine with it. No breaking balls. Next time, tell us earlier when Rubiales does weird things and let's move on. Right. That would have been more rational to me.
Definitely.
More woe for Everton, Jules. They are reportedly speaking to bankruptcy advisors who help companies restructure when they become insolvent.
Yeah. Not good.
This after the 777 deal seems to be on the verge of collapse, which we've said for so long.
We've said for so long that you've said from the beginning, pretty much, Gav, 777s, whose PR company reportedly parted ways with them because they didn't pay them.
That's
who, while saying they also have an airline who also went bust the last few days because there was no money left.
What about the $200 million they borrowed?
Yeah.
I wonder if those guys are going to see
it. I don't think they will see that money either. I'm glad neither you or I lend them some money because we would have never have that back either. And for Everton, as good as the weekend was on the pitch because you stay up and you know you're going to be in the Premier League next season, all that uncertainty around your ownership, who's going to own you, what, when, with what money, how are you going to pay people, not just the players, but all the staff, the new stadium is being built. It's really worrying.
Yeah, I think Everton, you know, there are assets there. There's equity in the stadium, in the playing staff.
Yeah.
I mean, look, If it worst comes to absolute worst, you have to sell
Brantwaite
or whatever, one of your guys to and then operate on a shoestring, fine. I mean, Dyche has done it before. And maybe you've swerved actually a bullet here in not getting 777. I am curious, with all the bad things that are happening in 777, remember they weren't just involved with Everton,
no.
Right? You've got, you know, Genoa, you've got Hertha Berlin, Red Star Paris, who've just been promoted.
Yeah.
Could there be a level of contagion where this spreads to the other clubs? I just really be in high alert about this.
I agree. Somebody named John Miller, who is an executive at NBC Sports, Gab, says that they've had conversation about holding some opening day Premier League games in the US and that they will continue to push for that. Yeah. He seems quite optimistic as well.
I'm sure Richard Masters thanks him for that because obviously the idea of holding Premier League games outside the borders of this country, and you and I have both lived here for a very long time, it's about as popular as syphilis among fans, right? This is the reality, right? Among fans here in England. So while I'm sure they could say it's more lucrative, look, the NFL does it, and obviously the relevant case with FIFA potentially opens a door to this. It's not a smart thing. Well, put it this way. I mean, maybe a smart thing for John Miller of NBC Sports to say. Again, the Premier League saying, like, no, dude, don't tell them that we were talking about this.
Yeah.
Please don't.
That's not a good idea.
The other thing which struck me about this, and, you know, we all talk about this, the U.S., such an important market for the Premier League and so on. Looking at some of these numbers, right? So the television deal in the U.S. is about £2 billion over 6 years, right? Which makes it, around 300-odd million a year, right?
Yeah,
something like that.
It's a bit more,
250. It's big, but the Premier League's domestic deal is around $2 billion a year. So it's about six times that, right? Are you going to leverage all of that to go and anger your fans here locally who buy those television packages and go to the stadium? The other thing is, which I thought was extraordinary, is this guy, he talked about how successful the Premier League Summer Series was.
So the friendly is in preseason, yeah.
Yeah, and this was organized by the Premier League and stuff. And he said, it was fantastic. We had 9 games, and we had 265,000 fans in attendance. Now, Jules, you're more of a math guy than I am. 9 games, 265,000. What's that average attendance?
22,000?
Less than 30,000.
Yeah.
You know, like, So I'm thinking, like, the average attendance in the Premier League is higher than that.
Yeah.
So why do I want to do this again? Are we sure it's such a slam dunk? I mean, it would be good for NBC, sure.
Yeah, sure, but for him.
I don't know. I think many things have to change before this becomes reality. Leicester City have mathematically won the championship, and they will almost certainly be joined by Ipswich Town in the Premier League next season. Jules, I don't follow the lower leagues at all. I did know that Leicester City were likely to be promoted.
Okay, you didn't know that.
And I've had dinner with Enzo Manesca, their manager.
Yeah, I remember
that. What else do I need? What do we need to know about Ipswich Town? They wouldn't be managed by a former Manchester United coach,
for example. Imagine someone like Kieran McKenna, for example.
There you go. Yeah. That sounds Irish.
Another promotion, because he took them from League One to the Championship, so third division to second. Now to the Premier League. I think they just need a point against Huddersfield at the weekend, which is the last game week in the Championship. To make it officially to the Premier League without going through the playoff, that means Leeds, who were fighting to go directly to the Premier League, will now quite likely have to go through the playoffs. There's still, I think, one place that can swing in on this weekend in the last game week in the playoff. But otherwise, we know that I think West Brom will be in it, Leeds, Southampton, and the fourth one, Norwich, but I think Norwich can potentially, or one of them can potentially be Norwich or West Brom could be overtaken by the team just below them. So there's still something to play.
Hull City, right? Was below them.
Hull City, that's right, exactly. So there's still some stuff to play on the last day of the season. Same for the relegation. But it's been great. And you know, it's a marathon, obviously, the Championship. 46 games is brutal.
Sure.
But there've been some really good stories.
Leicester City obviously have all this FFP, PSR nonsense.
Yeah, remember 16th highest wage bill in Europe? That's right.
Ipswich Town, I presume they do not, because they're coming from League One, so presuming other players make a...
They have loads of players that you've never heard of, I guess. Ipswich, yeah.
All right, well, I look forward...
Exactly.
To rediscovering Ipswich Town.
Next season in the Premier League. The US and Mexico have pulled out of their joint bid to host the 2027 Women's World Cup. Gab, that leaves Brazil and another joint bid from Belgium, Germany and Holland.
Yeah, so I think they pulled out, frankly, because...
Said to be ready for 2031, they won.
Yeah, but it's always like, oh, yeah, so we'll do it even better. No, I think the reality is they said, wait a minute, we're getting the FIFA Club World Cup in 2025, we're getting the Men's World Cup in 2026, and then the Women's World Cup the year after that. Like, wait, that's a bit greedy. That's a bit much. I think that's the real reason. I think they knew that there was a good chance they weren't going to get it, because people would have said, all right, now let's spread this around. And so what do they do when you know you're going to lose? You pull out so you don't lose.
Exactly.
Brazil, I'm told, are favored all over Belgium, Germany, and Holland. I'm not sure what the logic is behind that, other than the fact that maybe, correct me if I'm wrong, I believe South America have never hosted a Women's World Cup. There was a bid from Colombia a few years ago. So maybe that's the thinking. I mean, maybe. We had a Women's World Cup in France just 8 years ago, right? In 2019.
So if you rotate the continents again like you do for the men. Maybe.
Which you don't, but you can, I guess. So looks like Brazil in 2027 for us.
Here we go.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
We mentioned this story, obviously, on Monday, and Denzel Dumfries' celebration of the Inter title.
You're skipping ahead. I have a question for you.
Sorry, it's your question first.
A buzzer beater from Gemma Bonner gives Liverpool a 4-3 win over Chelsea in the Women's Super League. Jules, Emma Hayes pretty much conceded that they won't win the title now.
Yeah, she was in for the quadruple, obviously, the League Cup, the FA Cup, the Champions League, and the League for a final season at the club, the final few months. And I think there was a point where we saw, a bit like for Liverpool, that possible. And they lost to Arsenal in the League Cup final. They lost in the semi-final of the FA Cup, in the Champions League semi-final as well to Barcelona. And now, this, which I don't think many people saw coming, to lose to Liverpool in that way. But they've got a game in hand. They're 6 points behind City with just two games to go. So unless City draw points somewhere, it won't happen for Chelsea and for City. Even with Bernie Shaw being injured, it will be their first league title since 2016.
I watched on YouTube sort of Emma Hayes being interviewed with, I guess, the girl from the youth team who scored a couple of goals, like, I don't know, Aggie double-barreled somebody. I'm not being disrespectful. Just I think she's younger from the youth team. And maybe she's... I am biased here because I really, really like and respect Emma Hayes. But she's talking about how it's not about winning, it's about achievement. When somebody who's won as much as she has tells you that, I know there's still morons out there who are like, oh, so it's just silverware, it's all about winning, blah, blah, blah. And like, no, it's not. It's about achievement. And if Emma Hayes, who's won more, I believe, than almost anybody in the women's club game, can come out and says that, maybe people should listen.
Yeah, but it's not a good season. Chelsea are the best team by far in England. They have the best squad, they have the best manager. And to win nothing...
Yeah, but that's right. Who owns Chelsea women's team? Is it Bedarbek Bali and Todd Bowley? You don't think there's some infection contagion coming through from all the negativity?
That's true.
Karma?
I didn't think about that. Maybe that's it. Yeah,
joking.
Maybe. Denton Dumfries has apologized to my man Theo Hernandez. Gab, we mentioned on Monday the whole story, the celebrations, the GTA 5 banner. Do you understand why he's apologized?
I thought it was funny. I mean, maybe
it's not the first time we've seen it as well.
Maybe Theo thought it was worth about. Apparently, even reported that he was in danger of getting some kind of punishment from the league for being unsportsmanlike. I don't know. Maybe it's the idea of depicting Theo as his dog.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. Always like kind of.
But dude, it's a cartoon from a freaking video game.
I know.
The two were going at it in the derby. I think there's a lot of mutual respect there, although. You know, the rivals, they don't like it. That's the way it should be. I got no issue with it. Ruben Amorim has apologized to fans of Sporting for his trip to London to visit West Ham, Jules.
Maybe he listened to our show because you said that what a mistake it was to go so publicly from Lisbon to London, arriving, meeting with West Ham. And we said probably to put pressure on Liverpool at the time, thinking that he could still get that job.
Yeah, because Michael Edwards is going to
believe course.
That you're going to take the West Ham.
He's going to West Ham. Let's drive to London, hijack that meeting. I guess it's good for him to apologize and to come out and just saying like, it was a mistake, I'm sorry, I'm very demanding with my players, so I should, you know, I should be as demanding with myself and that kind of stuff. And he's a young coach, he will learn. He will have a lot of other summers where he can move or not, change clubs or not. I don't think he will ever do that mistake again.
I think they play Porto this weekend. Look, they're going to win the league. I don't even know if mathematically they might have even done it, right, Porto?
No, but not far.
Right. So Porto are going to have André Villas-Boas and all his vibes there. Honestly, if I was a Sporting fan, I would be like, I don't care what you've done for this club. I don't care for your apology. Right, we don't win titles very often, right? Normally it's other teams, normally it's Porto and Benfica that wins them. And for you to crap all over us with his stunt with West Ham, like seriously?
They owe him a lot, though.
We owe him nothing.
Really?
He should be considered himself privileged that he got a chance.
I know, but
that he got a chance to coach. That he got a chance to coach
Porto. Years.
Like, who cares?
Well,
he should be privileged.
Yeah,
because you know what? Clubs stay, fans stay, coaches come and go. And a guy
who,
look, big on him to apologize because, let's face it, 98% of managers wouldn't think to apologize.
Yeah.
98% of managers wouldn't be so stupid to do this publicly. You know, he did say, like, oh, I didn't do it in secret. The club had the permission. I had cameramen with me. Yeah, okay, fine. But that still doesn't lessen.
Yeah.
Again, big man that he apologized.
Yeah.
If I were a Sporting fan, which I'm not, it would take me a long, long time to forgive him.
Jesse Marsh is reportedly in contention for the South Korea job to replace Jürgen Klinsmann. Is that a good choice for him? I thought he wanted a big club in Italy. He lives in Italy now. He loves Serie A. Yeah, he loves Serie A.
I don't...
It's a long way to go to South
honestly,
Korea.
Like, I would say no. And the reason I would say no, Jesse, is, okay, while he might do the whole Princeton thing, oh, look, it's a new culture, just I experienced, you know, let me go experience Korea, and maybe you'll get into K-pop.
Don't be mean to Princeton.
No, I do wonder a little bit about his evolution, because, look, there are certain stereotypes, right? So he already has overcome one stereotype with the fact that he's an American coach.
Yeah.
going off and coaching South Korea, maybe takes him to the World Cup, maybe do well in 2026, quarterfinals, whatever, he's still going to be seen, rightly or wrongly, as a national team coach. So I think the best bet for him would be just be patient. You're still relatively young as a coach. Find a club that works for you and build them back up again. Yeah. The offers will come in.
Yeah.
When you start going to the national team route, especially when you come from a country like the U.S. and there are a lot of stereotypes against U.S. coaches around, it's a completely different kettle of fish. Now, that said, for obvious reasons, Korea probably a fit for the type of football he wants to play, whatever. But still, it's a big transition. Also, he's never coached a national team.
Nope.
That's another transition.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, you want to have this great life experience, sure. But from a pure career advancement perspective, I think long and hard about this. Finidi George is the new coach of Nigeria and my Super Eagles. Jules, okay, a couple things about this. I have to admit, I had lost track of Finidi George. I had no idea, but he was coaching in Yimba.
Yeah.
He only started coaching at age 50, which I thought was interesting. I don't know what he did before.
I don't know. Enjoy his life.
I loved him as a player.
I know.
What do you make of
it? I just love it when ex-pros and especially former greats come back and want to coach. We have Shevchenko and Rebrov, for example, with Ukraine, you know, even Deschamps and with France and others like that. I like
Southgate
that.
With Ings. Yeah.
Well, maybe okay. Not this one. But I just like it. I like it. And I think, especially in African culture, to know the national team, to know the country, in the past, very often, of course, they go and get European coaches who come with their knowledge and their culture. But I think there's something nice from someone like Finidi George to go back and a bit like we saw with Aliou Cissé, for example, and Senegal, or you know, even Jamel Belmadi with Algeria. I just like that kind of connection.
Nigeria have had several Nigerian coaches in the last 10 years as well. I just remember, I'm old enough to remember him as a player. I love the notion of the tall winger.
Yeah,
like, it's just too. Something
I see
that,
what you mean.
You know, whether it's him with Karez, who's your favorite tall winger? Putting you on the spot there.
Whew.
Now, according to Wikipedia, Finidi George was 1.91 meter, which is a very tall winger.
I'm not sure you can beat that.
I'm
not sure you can beat that.
What a player.
Cass, the Court of Arbitration for Sport has cleared Flamengo's Gabigol to play pending his appeal against the 2-year ban he received for allegedly evading a doping control.
So I'm happy for him that Cass has cleared him. I think it was ridiculous that he was banned to begin with. This whole story is so confusing, starting with the fact that this apparently happened in April 2023.
Yeah.
Where he did submit to the doping control, but apparently not straight away. They went to the training ground. They couldn't find him. He was somewhere in another part of the training ground, came back out. There was some suggestion, too, about the fact that they didn't... they only took, like, I think they only did a urine test instead of a blood test or a hair test or whatever. Like, there's no possible reason why it should take 12 months for justice to go into play.
Yeah, true.
Especially if something like you miss a doping control. Go, investigate, have your appeal. I'm glad he's out on appeal. I don't know how they're going to prove this one way or the other. Parma have been promoted back to Serie A after 1-1 draw against Bari. Jules, they spent three seasons in Serie B.
Three seasons. They're certain now with, I think, two games to go up. Como are behind. And the top two go straight away. The rest will go to the playoff. But the team in third, which I think is Venezia, 7 points behind now. So they're guaranteed to go up. Fabio Pecchia doing a really good job there with his Parma side. And I think, I don't know, it's just, it feels like that's where they belong. I know they've had, obviously, a lot of up and downs in the last 10 years or so. But it's good to have them back in Serie A.
Well, it's funny because Parma... owned by Kyle Kraus, of course, who, despite having the least Italian-sounding name in the world, Kyle Kraus, and not looking for Italian, apparently he's half Italian.
He is.
I'm happy for him because, you know, I remember I had the opportunity to speak to him when they took over the club. It sounded to me like they were doing everything right, maybe being a little bit too trusting of certain experts, and that's why they got relegated. But it's good to see them back up. And the guys at Venezia, also US-owned. So,
that's right. And Como, obviously, in second. Cesc Fabregas, Thierry Henry, all of that.
That makes for some variety and some diversity in Serie A.
Gab, can I please have more feel-good French stuff from Inter?
Yes. Marcus Thuram. Okay, he's never going to be my favorite Turan because no, that would be his dad, Lilian, for obvious reasons. And former Padma player, am I?
Yeah, of course.
And I believe Marcus Turan, was he born in Padma?
He was, indeed.
There you go. You should come.
Yeah, but he was bred in Paris because he moved at 3 years old.
So obviously, he plays for Inter. He's on the team bus. They're having this massive, extremely slow bus ride from the stadium to the Piazza del Duomo, the central square, where, it really is a crawl because the streets are strong. It took them hours and hours. But he sees an Inter fan who's basically climbed a telephone pole and he's kind of cheering them on. And this guy is wearing a Lukaku shirt where he's basically taped over the Lukaku part and, with like a magic marker written Turam on it. And he said, I want to find that guy. I want to find that guy and give him one of my shirts because that is commitment. Right?
That is.
A lot of people would be like, oh, this guy I no longer like, he's a player for my team and I have a shirt. I will throw it away. I will burn it. I will do voodoo. I'll donate it to charity. But no, to go out and to go and change it with a magic marker to Turam. So sweet. Well done.
Well done, Marcus. Yeah, that will be proud of you.
El Nasser beat El Khalej 3-1 in the Saudi Kings Cup as Cristiano Ronaldo scores another 2 goals, bringing his seasonal total to 44 in 45 games, Jules. And it would have been 45-45 if Cristiano, of course, known for his unselfishness, decided to let little Sadio Mane take a penalty.
That's right, Gab. And I guess Sadio Mane hadn't scored for so long that he wants to give him the... Let me check my notes. Oh, no, he scored 2 goals in the last game, Sadio Mane. And a goal... So, yeah, 3 goals in his last 2 games. Okay. I don't know what happened.
I'm sure there's a reason for this. But maybe all the people who call him Pinaldo and everything, maybe I want to put this to one side for a while. At least for today,
I remember him giving one to Karim at Real Madrid. So I don't think this is the first time. But he's still, when you know him and he's on a hat trick.
Exactly.
Saturday marks the 75th anniversary of the Superga tragedy, Gab, that ripped out one of the greatest Italian sides ever.
One of the greatest teams ever, I would argue. This is the great Torino side of the 1940s that they won 5 league titles. They would have won more in a row if not for the fact that there was the war in between the first ones and the last one. They didn't just win the league. They won the league with record points totals. They went on tour and beat the stuffing out of everybody that they played. Obviously, when you talk about football clubs perishing in air tragedies, past ones come to mind. More recently, Chapecoense, obviously Zambia, and Manchester United in Munich. And nobody's going to go and rank these. I will just tell you how this impacted Torino. All 18 players were on that flight perished. There were 31 dead in all, including the manager Egri Erbstein, who had been a refugee in a labor camp during the war. The response from everybody was just one of tremendous solidarity because the rest of the campaign, which Torino won because they had a big lead at that point, Torino had to play with their youth team players and everybody else played their youth teams against them. And then the following year, teams were, offered to donate, everybody donate one game to Torino so they could reassemble the team. They've only won one title since then in 1975-76, so that puts it in context. It is still one of the most... You can still go up the Superga, a hill just outside Turin. You can still go up there and visit it. It is one of the more moving things that you can do. Yeah. And the anniversary, of course, on Saturday. Jules, that brings us to an end. But we got to come back on Monday because Real Madrid might win the title. And we could get some more answers in the race for the Premier League title as well. Until then, love the game, love your neighbor, love yourself.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate is to not search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster.
93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.